Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Rock the Walls host Patrick Walford. This is the very first time that I'm going to have a fellow, I don't know if the word's coworker, colleague, but yeah, I guess technically coworker for the exorbitant salary we all get. My coworker Patrick in Canada is doing this. So, continent, same, country, different. I'm really excited about this one. We're going to discuss being Adobe host. He has a lot more experience than I do. So hopefully I'll learn something from him. You ever wake up one day and get a phone call that could potentially change your life? Well, I had one of those today and I can't wait until everything's finalized. Just be on the lookout for some news regarding Candy Hearts. Lots of changes, but I'd say in a very positive direction. The next few weeks, we've got JJR, who manages 4 Years Strong and Set Your Goals. He also plays in a band called Keep Flying, and he also used to work with the Wonder Years back in the day, so I'm sure he's going to have some stories, and he has some crazy ear gauges. That looks painful. We've got Daniel Rubin, who manages Too Close to Touch, who are selling out venues across the country with water parks on this co-headlining tour. He also manages I the Mighty, a band that I am a sincere fanboy to. And producer Eric Ron, who's worked with Issues, Attila, I the Mighty, Too Close to Touch, naturally, and a whole bunch of other bands. I think he also manages New Year's Day, Eric Ron. So I'm talking to the guy who manages the guy who manages the band New Year's Day. So how's that for a degree of separation? We've got Megan Thompson the following week, who does a lot of the marketing and art and helps out with Hopeless Records, a label that has bands like Sum 41, Bayside, Newfound Glory, and a band that I worshipped in high school called Mustard Plug was on Hopeless. So that's pretty sweet. And then the next week, we've got Johnny Minardi, who manages a plethora of producers, in addition to being former A&R at Fueled by Ramen. So he was a part of championing many releases that I still love and listen to. And he does that as well for Equal Vision Records currently. So, like I said, this year, 2017, I'm really trying to focus on the behind-the-scenes people that make the people you see on stage happen. I don't think that they get enough credit. So credit is here. So every single Tuesday night, 5 p.m. Pacific time, which it's actually really hot here. I think that the weather is extremely bipolar lately. It's like 90 degrees now. And 8 p.m. Eastern time, Waldman's Words. Special shout out to Fish for being a trooper post emo night and recording this and actually giving me a half of a smile right now. So enjoy the show. Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with fellow Adobe coworker Patrick Walford of Rock the Walls. Say hello.
Hey, man, what's going on? Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I just want to let you know that you are the first person on staff here to congratulate me when I got this show, and I thought that that was a really nice thing. I don't know if it's your Canadian upbringing or if you're just a nice dude, but that made me feel really welcome, so thank you for that.
Anytime, man. Once anybody starts doing a show on our station, they honestly become a part of the family, so I'm more than happy to have you as a part of it, man.
Well, thank you, and I love your show, but another thing when we were talking over Facebook chat is, you knew about my band Lido Beach, or did you know about the City Drive? Like, how did we meet exactly?
Okay, so this is kind of weird. One of my friends in high school, he was I believe his name is Danny Smith, who would have been the vocalist for City Drive. He was like a huge like a Team Wolf on campus, or I believe it was Big Wolf on campus, whatever TV yeah. show he was in. They were a huge fan. They're like, oh, like, man, you got to check out the stuff. And then eventually, I guess, a City Drive, you guys broke up, and then you started Lido Beach and stuff. And I can remember, like, listening to that stuff back on MySpace and, like, I want to say, like, 07, 08-ish.
Yeah, that's when
yeah,
I quit
man.
The stage
so it was a bit of a trip when I realized. I was like, oh, wait, like, you're the dude who, like, did that shit. Like, how did I not, like, realize that right away?
Yeah, no, it was kind of crazy. I was in the City Drive. I moved to L.A. I knew two people. None of them worked in music, and I just auditioned for a bunch of bands, and
I had no idea what Big Wolf on Campus was. It was a TV show on, I believe, in the States, ABC Family and Fox Family. And I auditioned and I got in and we started. And when we started hanging out, he would get mobbed by like 17-year-olds who just loved the show Big Wolf on Campus, which, cool, power to them. But anyway, that was quite a connection. He was like maybe like a G-list celebrity in California, like on the cusp of being like a reality show star. So it was pretty cool, and we did a lot of music, and then I quit the band and started Lido Beach, and it's just cool that you even heard of Lido Beach. We did some cool things, so.
Hell yeah, man. Definitely.
I'm glad that Lido Beach found its way to Canada. And speaking of Canada, I mean, they have quite a burgeoning music scene. What was it like growing up there? I mean, obviously still living there, but how did that turn you into the man you are today?
Man, I'll be quite honest with you. Right up until I was about like 17 years old in my senior year of high school, I was like really super into like sports. Like I played competitive hockey. I was a goaltender playing rep hockey around like the province of Ontario and stuff. And the hockey team that I played for growing up, we actually won back-to-back-to-back provincial championships, and we were always a team. We were a single-A center because our town was a little bit smaller, but we would go into double-A tournaments and, like, beat the crap out of these teams and sometimes win the tournaments and stuff. So it was, like, super hockey for me growing up. Like, that was definitely, like, my life. I wouldn't say, like, I was a jock or, like, anything like that, but I was definitely just, like, your typical, like, kind of, like, quirky, like, kind of, like, shy goalie type deal. But when I was about 17 years old, that's when, you know, you kind of come to the life realization as a Canadian growing up playing hockey. Okay, you're pretty good, but you're not good enough to make the NHL or to make a living from playing hockey. So what else would you want to do? And it was like, oh, well, I would love to, like, cover hockey and do that. So it was initially, like, more sports broadcasting. But as I just started to discover music and whatnot, I think, you know, like, signing up for MySpace and interacting with my friends and seeing, like, what music that they had on their profile and stuff, that kind of got me more into, like, these, like, the kind of music that I cover and the kind of music that I was listening to at the time type deal. So for me, my first show wasn't even until I was, like, 17 years old. So that's kind of, as I was getting into high school and going into college, that's more so when I started to, like, get into music and start going to, like, more local shows and all that kind of stuff.
And you were a really late bloomer with that. Like, that's interesting to hear.
Yeah, like 100%. For me, when I was 17, like, the band that really, like, introduced me and got me into, like, this world of music was the band Motion City Soundtrack. And I saw them live for the first time in, like, August 2007. I would have been 17 years old. It just, like, blew my mind. After that show, I was like, okay, like, I need to go to way more shows and start going to as many as I can type deal. And I guess when I was in that initial semester of my senior year of high school, that's when journalism and, you know, doing the whole broadcasting thing, but more so on the music side, kind of became an idea of mine. So kind of out of just a shot in the absolute dark, in the beginning of November, I sent the Canadian publicist for Epitaph Records an email basically just saying, hey, like, my name is Patrick Walford. I write for, like, Banting Memorials High School in Allison, Ontario's newspaper. So wondering if I could do an interview with Motion City Soundtrack, you know, talk about their new album, which at the time was Even If It Kills Me.
Yep.
But much to my surprise, he, like, got back to me and was like, yeah, for sure. Just be at the venue at this time on this day type deal, and we'll have it all set up.
That was the very first band that you got to interview?
Yeah.
That's
Motion City
stuff.
Was the very first band, so.
And I just want to let you know, I hope you agree with me. I think that Panic Stations is so underrated. I really liked it.
100%. I would even argue that that's their best album that they've done, I would say. I'm not one of those people. I'm not like one of those hardcore Motion City fans who's like, oh, but, like, nothing will ever be as good as, like, the first two albums. Like, I love their entire catalog, and Panic Stations, yeah, for me, it was really underrated as well. I think that album really went under the radar. There's some songs on there that are like literally some of the best songs they've ever written. I think a song like Gravity really stands out. Like I Can Feel You is a little bit different. And, you know, until they announced that they were going to be breaking up, I don't think I necessarily maybe fully understood the final song on that record. And then when they broke up and I listened to that song again, it was like, dude, this is like the like swan song of like this band. Like this is like the like funeral kind of song.
You think they knew?
Feel in a way it kind
you
of
think
felt
they
like.
Knew it was coming?
I guess after listening to it, after they announced that they were breaking up, it seemed a little bit more like maybe this is, you know, maybe this did make sense and I just didn't catch it when I've been listening to it for the 6 months that it had been out before they announced they were breaking up.
Guess which album is my favorite, Motion City? You have two guesses.
I would say Commit This to Memory.
Nope.
Or My Dinosaur Life.
You got it. That's my favorite one.
Nice.
I think My Dinosaur Life front to back is their strongest. Like I like Even If It Kills Me, but there are some lulls on there. But I really, mm-hmm. really, really, My Dinosaur Life front to back is great. I wasn't into Go. That was the one album that kind of was like, I'm not really that into this. But I'm a huge fan of them. I went to their farewell tour in LA. It was packed with a bunch of sad people like me. And Spill Canvas was on just before them. So that was pretty sweet.
Nice. Yeah, man. I actually they played in Toronto here in June for the farewell show on that tour and whatnot. But I actually
you went to the Chicago
ended up
one.
Saying pretty much just fuck it and decided to drive to Chicago for their final show from Toronto. It was about a 9-10 hour drive total. That's like one way it's ideal. So yeah. I literally just drove there on the Sunday in the morning at about 8 a.m. Eastern time. Got there at about 6 o'clock at night, went to the show, and woke up the next morning and drove straight back home. So 100% worth it, though. I think they played it's a 36 or a 37 song set list. It was like 2.5 hours. It was just unreal.
That was at the Metro, like, post-Riot Fest, right? I think so.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. Yeah. That must have been a fun night. So I guess you shifted from athletics to interviewing bands like Motion City Soundtrack. When you were starting, who else did you interview?
So after Motion City Soundtrack, it would have been a couple months until my next interview. I ended up interviewing the Matches in April, I believe, of 2008. That would have been the EP tour that they did with Rocket Summer and All Time Low co-headlining. Forever the Sickest Kids opened
and
as well.
Sonny Moore.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty wild, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I'll be quite honest. I was, at the time of going to see that show and seeing it, I was like, dude, like, what is this? I did not dig it whatsoever. I mean, little did we know that you'd go on and start a little electronic project called Skrillex and just take over the world.
Yeah, small time stuff. And now he's back to where he started. But what was crazy is that it wasn't quite EDM and it wasn't quite rock. And I remember when it came out, I listened to it and I was just like, this shit sucks. And I don't think it did well, but then he completely rebranded, reshifted, and now, like, as big as All Time Low is, like, he laughs at that. Like, he's just...
Yeah, man.
It's pretty wild.
Some of the other bands that I got to interview, too, and the first couple, I would say... It's hard to say if this was like the fifth or the sixth interview that I had ever done because I was doing a couple interviews over the course of that day, but I was able to also cover the 2008 Warped Tour, the Toronto date, and Angels and Airwaves comes out and does interviews, and obviously a bunch of people want to interview them and whatnot, so I guess they had the Canadian publicist of their record label there. I think it would have been Universal or Warner, so he breaks the band up into different interviews and whatnot, and young 18-year-old me just happens to get Tom DeLonge as like one of his first freaking interviews. And honestly, I mean, it to me, it's so funny with all the stuff that happened with Blink and whatnot, and everyone has their opinions and all the stuff that they say about Tom, and they've never met him in person. Mm-hmm. When I interviewed him, he was just like, honestly, the nicest possible dude that you could even imagine. Like, literally the best guy. I can actually remember just before the interview started and whatnot, and they just walked into the press area, saw me, and he's like, hey, hey, I'm Tom, like, nice to meet you, what's your name? And I just, like, introduce myself, and he's just like, man, like, let's say we just get out of here and just go and lay down in a field and just enjoy the great weather.
Wow.
So I guess that was, like, I think that was, like, day 12 or 13 in a row of them, like, playing shows and whatnot, which he referred to in the interview. He's like, if you look in the encyclopedia of fucking insanity, like, this is what would come up type deal. You can actually, I think there's still a clip up there on YouTube, if you just type in, like, Patrick Walford, Tom at the Launch. And, like, the very start of the interview, a friend that was filming the interview for me, they go, oh, you guys just need to get a little bit closer to get into the frame. And he reaches around and, like, puts his arm around me and, like, cuddles me in and, like, wow. Just starts, like, kind of funnily, like, playing with my arm as a joke. So it was pretty hilarious, to say the least.
And have you still washed just, that,
like,
arm
to this
since?
Day, like, blows my mind. So,
well, I mean, that's pretty sweet. I remember when I saw Blink and I knew that something was going to happen with them, and then they took off, and then obviously after their Untitled record and the shift between Angels and Airwaves and Plus 44, there was a lot of acrimony. But it's cool that you met him when he was in a good mood and friendly to you. I mean, because, yeah, a lot of people say negative things, so it's good to know that someone who actually met him and doesn't read his blogs thought he was a nice guy. So I guess... Yeah. Was when you were interviewing him, was it called Rock the Walls, or was it just a dude interviewing people?
So at this point, I was still just doing stuff like for the high school newspaper. It would have been the summer of being in between high school and college type deal. So the paper just, they said, you know, you can still write about it and whatnot, just post it on our website. But Rock the Walls would have started in February of 2009. So I started my first semester of school at Niagara College in September of 2008. The first semester, you pretty much just kind of like get a feel of everything, because the program is radio, TV, and film. So you have, like, you know, your TV portion, your radio portion, your film portion and whatnot. So you don't, there wasn't really as much focus on like the on-air aspects and stuff, because you'd be rotating in the class. There'd be like one or two people on air per lab per week type deal. So then at the very start of the second semester, the second year people who were like the program director and the music director of the college radio station stuff, they came to a lecture and said, you know, you guys can do specialty shows. Basically, all you need to do is send us a demo. Tell us like what your show is going to be about, what kind of music you're going to play, how you're going to be able to fill, 35% Canadian content. Cause that's a requirement in Canada. You have to play at least 35% of Canadian music per hour. So I basically put together a proposal for the show. Dude, like, I'm not even exaggerating when I say this. I honestly probably spent like 3 or 4 hours on this little 2 or 3 minute thing that I knew that they were going to listen to once and decide yes or no there. But I just put so much work into it and was like just hoping so badly that I ended up getting the show. And kind of in that point in time, doing that and whatnot, hockey message board I used to go on. It's like posted a thread up and was like, hey guys, like I'm going to start doing a radio show on my college station. It's going to be like alternative music and stuff. And one of my buddies commented and posted, he's like, man, like it writes itself, like just call your show Rock the Walls. And that was boom. Like legitimately the first comment that anybody ever posted on it, and ended up being the one that I chose. So it all just kind of like went from there.
That's pretty great. I mean, it's a good name, and it's how I remembered your last name, so it's working. I mean, as someone who's a WAL last name, you know, respect to that. So you said that you were doing alternative music, and your show now, I would say, is gravitating more towards heavier stuff, though, correct?
Yeah, for sure. I guess, like, to clarify, like, alternative, like, stuff like pop punk and, like, metalcore and all that kind of stuff is what I was playing at first. I think, actually, like, what I would say is, like, you're listening to Rock the Walls, you're a mix of pop punk, ska, and metal music or something like that. So I used to play, like, a bit of ska, a bit of pop punk. It was more, like, kind of centralized within kind of like the Warped Tour realm of bands. So I would interview bands like you know, like All Time Low, to stuff like Bring Me the Horizon and Thursday, like Real Big Fish or Goldfinger, like all those sorts of bands.
I mean, those are all bands I like, especially the ska stuff. I was It's funny. I was in Portland this weekend, and I walked into a bar, and consecutively they played Operation Ivy, Real Big Fish, Goldfinger, Less Than Jake. It was my dream. It was like they curated my playlist from high school. So
nice.
Mad respect to that stuff.
For sure.
So I guess we're going to take a short break really soon, but how did you shift from, you know, doing Rock the Walls on your own to being a part of the Idobe family?
So basically, like I mentioned, like February 2009 is when I would have started the show on the station. So that was in my first year of college. So I then did my show on the station in my second year of college for the entire year, and then for the first semester in my third year of college, because it was a three-year program. So it was about like December of 2010. I did my last show on the station, and I was like, okay, I want to keep doing my show. Where are like some stations, or what's some stuff that like I could submit to type deal to possibly do it? So I had, I used to like post an Absolute Punk and whatnot, and I'd always see them post like stuff for like the Gun Show, or like post interview clips and stuff. And
DJ Ross Star.
That was actually a little tiny bit, I think, before my time, like as far as when I would have like known about Idobe and whatnot. But yeah, so I saw them always post about Guns and stuff.
Guns. He's balling, you know. So
for sure, man. So and then I just basically went on the website. I listened to the station a couple times before, like when I was in college and stuff, and more or less just like sent them an email, was just like, hey, this is who I am, this is what I've done so far, I've interviewed like these sorts of bands type deal, here's like basically it was just like a cut of like an entire show that I did, and I would have sent that to our program director Eddie, and he dug it. He was like, this is cool. What we can do is we'll give you like a three-show trial on the station starting on January the 5th of 2011 at 8 o'clock on Saturdays. So did a couple shows on the station. I think my very first show I would have had 4 Years Strong and Norma Jean on. And basically it just went from there. I guess they liked me after the trial, and it's now like almost 6.5 years later. So
that's pretty great.
I'm still here.
You're still here. And speaking of being still here, we're actually going to take a short break where you won't be here, and we'll come back and discuss more about post 4 Years Strong and Norma Jean shows. It's funny you said you went to the Warped Tour in 2008. Both of those bands played it then. I remember.
Yeah, they did actually.
Norma Jean was main stage, and 4 Years Strong was just up and coming with Rise or Die Trying. So anyway, thank you so much. Stick around. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Rock the Walls host Patrick Walford. So right before break, he was just talking about his very first show on Idobe with 4 Years Strong and Norma Jean. Can you please retell the story you told over commercial break about Norma Jean? Because that gave me a giggle and I was kind of scared.
Yeah, for sure, man. So aside from also covering Warped in Toronto in 2008, I was actually also on the Motion City soundtrack message board, and a bunch of us, I believe it was 10 to 12 of us in total, we decided to fly out to California, rent like a 12-passenger van, and follow like the last 5 dates of Warped Tour, which were all in California. So Motion City soundtrack was going to be playing after Norma Jean on one of the main stages, so we were watching Norma Jean. And in between one of their songs, this is like as they're releasing their album, The Anti-Mother, around that time, their singer Corey, I can just remember him just being like, go and check out our brand new album, The Anti-Mother. It's out right now. It'll make you want to punch a baby dolphin in the blowhole.
Well, I mean, if any band is going to do awesome. It, I guess, would Norma Jean be considered like Christian metalcore?
I guess so. I think now people like, as far as like Christian metalcore and all that stuff goes, I don't know if it just doesn't seem like either there's as many bands doing it, which I don't think that might not be the case, or if it's just people don't make as big of a deal out of it as maybe they used to, like, back in the day, you know, when, like, keep being, like, As It Lay Dying and stuff. They're like, oh, well, they're really awesome, and, like, they're a Christian metal band, too, and it's just like, okay, you could have, like, left out that, like, you know what I mean, the Christian part. It wouldn't really, like, deter me from seeing a band or anything like that, but I think at the time they were on Solid State, I want to say, so I'm pretty sure, yeah, like, people would still consider them to this day, like, a Christian band for sure.
Well, I remember my old band, the City Drive, the Danny Smith Big Wolf on Campus band, we played 2006 Warped Tour, and this was when Under Oath was pretty much as big as they ever were going to be, and they were main stage, and they always gave Jesus a shout out every single show. So I'd say the Christian scene with, like, Solid State, Tooth and Nail was way more outwardly, I guess, open about it. Maybe now people are just like, we're Christian and we're musicians and blah, blah, blah. But I digress. So let's hear about some other people you interviewed besides the Dolphin Blowhole Band.
So some other cool bands that I've gotten to just kind of see over these last 8 years just kind of grow up or really grow into, like, that headliner status after, you know, remembering seeing them when they were opening up big tours and stuff. I mean, there's bands like, you know, like A Day to Remember that I've gotten the chance to interview, and like August Burns Red. Set Your Goals is another really awesome band. I mean, more recently, a really cool band, and a band that I think a lot is definitely, like, really high on a lot of people's radars right now is the band I Prevail. Back in 2015, I was their first ever radio interview that they had ever done, anything like that. And literally within, you know, a week or two of that interview happening, that's when, like, their cover of, like, Blank Space by Taylor Swift and their Heart Versus Mind EP, like, really started to catch on and start doing really well. And those guys are killing it now.
They charted.
Sell out headline tour after releasing their album Lifelines last year. But then bands like, you know, Bullet From My Valentine, Lamb of God, you know, Body Count, which I got to interview last week, which is just insane. Even like bands like Korn, which has been really cool to, you know, a little bit stuff more recently I've had on the show, like Suicide Silence and Amir, all that kind of stuff. It's really kind of been like just totally spanning so many different genres. And even at a point in time, I was interviewing like a lot of like the bigger like Canadian indie acts, like Tokyo Police Club and like Arkells, like those kind of bands and stuff. So like I have lost track. I think probably a couple years ago, I think I was keeping track of like how many bands I had interviewed and stuff like that. But at this point, I can honestly say that like I've lost count. I know it's in the hundreds. I don't know if it's quite the thousands yet, but it's got to be getting up there soon, because I think in the last couple of years I've done like well over 100 interviews like a year, whether it's like for the show or like the Warped Tour radio stuff that we've done in the past couple summers and whatnot, to just like any other stuff type deal. So it's always crazy. Like they're recently on top of like working my job at the airport down
let's
in
get to that.
Toronto
let's
Island.
Get to that. Let's get to that.
Like,
the airport
it's
job.
Crazy.
Well, you actually, it's funny. It's like you're reading my outline, but you have a job and you have a fiance. Happy birthday to her today, even though today is not when the show airs. But in addition to having your own show, or you've interviewed almost four figures worth of bands, you have a day job at the airport. I thought for some reason it was a supermarket, but Fish corrected me. So I said he works at a supermarket and an airport. But what do you do at the airport exactly? And how does that – I mean, is that conflicting with your Rock the Walls, or it's like when you're really exhausted from work, that's when you do it?
No, man. Honestly, it's like I would say probably for maybe like the last 3 or 4 months – I've been working somewhere between 60 to 70 hours a week and then doing all my radio stuff on top of that. And like, honestly, it's just like, it doesn't feel at any point in time like I'm overwhelming myself with interviews or anything like that. And just what I was going to say before is like, I'm working at the airport and doing interviews like while I'm working. Like for instance, last Saturday I did 3 interviews in the span of like 2 hours, like all one right after another while I was also like on my job working. So,
wow.
Basically I work like the Toronto Island Airport is like actually located on an island, a little small Toronto Island, as it's called.
Long Island's an island too, just so you know.
Yeah. So basically, the Pearson Airport is the big international airport in Toronto, and the airport that I work at is a little bit smaller. It's more so like Eastern Seaboard, so like up to the Maritimes in Canada, like Newfoundland and Prince Edward Island and Nova Scotia and whatnot. But the, it also flies to like Newark, New York, Boston, like a bunch of other places along the East Coast, and then as well out west to like Chicago and whatnot. So basically, they have a ferry that goes across from the mainland to the island every 15 minutes, and this ferry will basically be bringing over, you know, like ambulances, fire trucks, police cars, you know, RCMP, border people to like deliveries to the airport, you know, service people as far as doing like repairs or building stuff, anything like that. So basically, my job is to more or less, in this control tower, is open the gates whenever need be, whenever these trucks and all this kind of stuff needs to come out, but as well record and make sure that everything is coming through is like legitimate and people aren't like either getting let across for free, or they're just people saying that like they work at the airport, but they don't work at the airport. They really just want to like go over there to like park for free or like something like that. So basically, just like in this tower, I control all the gates, and over on the mainland, I control all that kind of stuff. And more or less, the people that are working there, they report to me more or less, like if there's any issues going on or anything like that.
You
so,
ever see the show The
more
Wire?
Or less, just like,
have you ever seen the show The Wire?
Yeah, I have.
You're reminding me of the Polish people who work the docks in Baltimore.
Yeah, man.
That's what you do, man.
It's honestly pretty much like that. And
you see 13 hookers every time you
go to work. It's fun dealing with people every day.
I mean, there's a lot of death there. I hope you haven't seen too many death.
Oh, I've been very lucky and very fortunate. There has only been one time, and this was super weird, and it actually was not at the airport, but I was working over on the mainland, working at the ferry gate, like waving like the cars through and whatnot, or any delivery trucks. It's only 15 can go on at a time, and like it was like some shit straight out of a horror movie, man. All of a sudden, just like a floating dead body was just like at like around where like the dock is, like on the seawall and whatnot. So like obviously like all like the marine police, like all that kind of stuff was called, and they handled it like super quickly, but it was like a super like freaky like what the heck thing when it happened. It was weird as hell, that's for sure.
That shit is a daily occurrence at the Idobe airports. Dead bodies everywhere, all the time, in the fridge. You don't want to see what's in Tom's closet, dude. That guy kills people. So just so you know, like he may seem unassuming, but he murders people in cold blood every single day. So you have a job, you have a fiance who I assume is extremely supportive of your radio show. And I would love to hear if you have any specific stories, not involving the airport, but involving bands that you've interviewed. Because one thing I've noticed on Facebook is, we'll get to this at the end, but you've commented on professionalism with some bands. Like you brought up Suicide Silence and Amira too, and I've noticed on Facebook a lot of people and bands that have sold maybe 17 copies of their record are like making fun of Suicide Silence only, quote unquote, selling 5,000. And I just laugh about that because it's like, dude, it's like, shut the hell up. So I would love to hear if you have any stories, hopefully some juicy ones, about any bands you've interviewed or any shows you've been to.
Well, like honestly, like at any time that I've gone on those like tirades and stuff, mostly it's just like there's, I guess like the big thing in doing this for as long as I have, like I'm not like saying it like I'm an old fogey or anything like that, but it's like I don't know what it is, but it feels like they're like it's very easy to tell when somebody like interviews bands for like the right reasons, and they do it because, you know, they want their listeners, or they want the people watching their interviews or reading their interviews to find out more about their band, to you know, basically be able to get more knowledge on their favorite bands and, you know, feel like they can learn more about them and whatnot. Whereas, like, then there's interviewers where, you know what I mean? It's they'll just do it because they get a free ticket into the show or so that they can brag to their friends or brag to whomever, you know, maybe
dude, I'm bragging maybe to everyone somebody, that I'm interviewing Patrick Walford. Like, everyone in my Los Angeles suburb community, I walk around, I'm just like, yo, I don't give a shit. Oh, you just sold a script? Well, I'm interviewing Patrick Walford.
Yeah, so for me, I guess it's always just been like, and like, I don't know, it's just always like kind of the way I've been since the start. It's like, I don't, like, if I confirm an interview with a big band or anything like that, like, I'm not going to go on social media and start talking about, you know, how I'm so stoked I'm interviewing this big band and all this stuff. Because, I mean, especially, like, as I'm sure, you know, both you know and anybody else listening who interviews bands, it's like, sometimes shit comes up and, like, day of, it's like, bam, like, they can't do the interview. Or
I thought,
like,
you sometimes were canceling on me, man. I get it. People cancel last minute.
Or, like, sometimes, man, like, interviewing bands here in person in Canada, a lot of the times, because of the roaming fees are just so ridiculous, a lot of bands will shut their phones off, so their publicist will give me their tour manager's contact info, their phone number, and it'll be the only way I can get a hold of them, and their phone shut off. So sometimes I'm left, you know, at a venue at, you know, 15 minutes before I'm supposed to do an interview, scrambling to try and find like a way into the venue, because most of the time the venues are locked and there's really nobody near the doors, you know, 2 or 3 hours before doors. I mean, most of the time it works out, but there's times where, you know what I mean, shit happens and like the interview just can't happen anymore. So I mean, probably the coolest thing that's happened recently to me is I got to interview Pierce the Veil last week, and just after I introduced them, and the intros that, like, I do when I do my interviews, I don't rehearse them anymore. I literally just, like, I don't know, I literally can just do it off the top of my head, type deal. So I go and I do this intro into the interview, and I'm speaking with Jaime, their bassist, and Mike, their drummer, and they're both just like, dude, like, holy shit, like, that's like, that was so awesome. Thank you for the great introduction. And I'm just like, so, like, they're like, man, did you, like, rehearse that? And I'm just, like, so, like, taken aback, like, holy shit, like, thank you so much, guys. Like, I obviously wasn't, like, gonna gush during the interview, but I was like, holy crap. That
was,
like,
flattering. That's
really
nice.
Unexpected and really cool. And a couple people have kind of said that to me just over this past little bit, and I'm just like, thanks so much. Like, it means a lot for them to, like, say that, or even after an interview when they say, you know, thank you very much for the good questions, or thank you for the conversation. I had a good time. Like, at the end of the day, I mean, that's worth more to me than any amount of money could possibly be, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, when you have appreciation from that. I had a client actually on the show last week. His name is Alex Arias. He's a producer that I manage, and he's worked with the Mowglis and Strumbellas and many bands. And I did my intro, and he was to my left, and he nodded. He's like, that was good. And I was like, yeah, thank you. But just so you know, every single word of the show is rehearsed line by line. I have every single follow-up question, every single pause, awkward laugh when I interrupt. I knew what you were going to say. So we're going to close this out shortly, but do you have any advice for people who want to break into what you're doing? And do you have any advice for any bands that are trying to pursue this as a career?
The biggest thing I would say for anybody looking to get into interviewing bands and stuff is have fun. Like seriously, have a lot of fun doing it. Do your research. Bands really appreciate it when you know their music and you know what you're talking to them about, and that you're not just, you know, just asking them very generalized, generic questions. Cause
like
it,
Nardwar,
sometimes
dude. Nardwar.
Yeah, no, like people like Nardwar, who is just absolutely awesome. But as well, just be yourself. You know, nobody can be you. Don't try and imitate or act like any other like interviewers or radio hosts or anything like that. I mean, yeah, sure. Like if that's like your inspiration and those are people that you look up to, that's really awesome. But just be yourself. I mean, there's so many. so many hosts on like the you know terrestrial radio today and stuff, and it's like it doesn't matter if you go from you know one station to another. It's just you can just tell that it's not like very genuine, and that maybe they aren't as into it as maybe they should be. You know what I mean? That it almost feels like it's kind of a little bit forced for them.
It's the same for creating music. Like, don't try to sound like Silverstein because we already have Silverstein. Like, make your own. Like, it's cool if you're influenced by it, but do your own thing.
As well, I would say, you know, don't be afraid to send emails to the bigger bands. What's the worst thing that can happen? You get an email back saying no, and then you just try again next time. A lot of people seem to take it personal or get bent out of shape when maybe they send an interview request out and a publicist doesn't reach back to you. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is most of these publicists are legitimately getting hundreds upon hundreds of emails a day, and it's so easy to, you know, slip through the cracks. Another thing would be is just you know, be patient. Sometimes you will, a publicist or a band will tell you to meet them at the venue at 4 o'clock for their interview, and you'll get there and you'll find out that they still have to do sound check and the guys want to go and eat food and that the interview isn't going to happen until maybe 5:30 or 6 o'clock. Just be prepared to, you know, sometimes maybe you have to wait a little bit longer than maybe you had planned, and just basically don't be afraid to ask questions to your peers or anything like that.
And be humble. Be humble.
Yeah, man. Like anytime anybody will send me a message on Facebook or have any questions, like ask me about like any radio related stuff. Like for me, like that's super, like I take it, you know, very personally when somebody, you know, decides to reach out and message me for advice. You know, it means a lot to me. So any way I can help anybody, it's like, We're all in this together. It shouldn't be about being a competition. It should be about being a community and helping all of us, every single one of us, become better as, you know, as hosts, as interviewers, as writers, as people in the music industry, because there's just so many people within it that are just so cutthroat, and like at the drop of a dime, they'd be willing to, you know, screw over their friend or screw over somebody that maybe they've worked with in order to get a bigger opportunity. You know what I mean?
Welcome to artist management. So anyway, thank you so much for doing this show. The next few weeks, we've got some other awesome behind the scenes people. We've got JJR, who manages 4 Years Strong and Set Your Goals, two bands you gave shout outs to. We've got Daniel Rubin, who manages producer Eric Ron and Too Close to Touch and I the Mighty. We've got Megan Thompson at Hopeless Records. And we've got Johnny Minardi at Equal Vision Records, formerly Fueled by Ramen. So, again, Patrick, let's give you an opportunity to give your show a few shout-outs. How can people tune into you, and how can they contact you?
Yeah, so people can check it, Rock the Walls, Thursdays at 8 p.m. on Adobe Howl, and Saturdays over on Adobe Radio at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. It also replays a couple times through the course of the week on both stations. But as well, I am over on Adobe Howl for the midday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday to Friday, over on Howl. They can reach me on social media at Rock the Walls or Facebook.com/Rock the Walls. If you send me a message or you tweet at me, anything like that, I will answer it. If you want to send me an email, submit your bands, music, anything like that, patrick.walford@adobe.com. I guess that last part of the last question, about like advice for bands like trying to get on my show and stuff. Honestly, just send an email. Tell me a little bit about your band. Send me some stuff. I would say for the sake of your band and whatnot, just send what the final mix is, because a lot of times bands will send me stuff like, hey, this is a demo that we recorded in Johnny's basement 15 minutes ago, but we're going to be having masters in a couple months. It's like, well, wait until the masters get sent out, because that's like the first impression people are going to have of your band if I play it on the radio type deal. So,
yep.
They can email me and send me their music, and maybe they'll get to come on the show, do an interview, or... you know what I mean?
You only get one chance to make a first impression. So use your words wisely. Do not send something without vocals. Anyway, so there we go. Patrick, I really appreciate your time. I wish your fiance a wonderful, wonderful birthday. And tune in to Rock the Walls because you might hear about your new favorite band. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thanks a lot, Scott. I really appreciate having me on, man.
No problemo. Have a good day, guys.